Okay, so we will do a lot of work with this chant because its particular intention is to sort of harmonize, integrate things, bring things together. And the bringing together, if you like, of the four elements and the root of the four elements. So this idea of the beginning, bringing together of the, I suppose, manifest life with the mist, with the ground of life, the substrate. So the chant itself holds this whole act of bringing together and bridging and transmission of light, as well as this sort of energies of creation and destruction, you know, this sort of becoming and then unbecoming and beginning again. And one way to see the chant really is to have to see the letter Shin at the center, as the center of a wheel, the still point of the wheel, and the letters Yud, He, Vav, He revolving around in the creative cycle. So I want to come back to the thing that just before we're looking at that, we're talking about this idea of the web of life, the connection to between things. And there's this practice, in a way, of creating this catalyzing space. Now, you get one of the things you find that the thing that we're doing where we just reach out and if you like conjoin our energies with an object or another being, is that we come into the sort of state really that the bards are talking about when they, for example, when we look at the colloquy of the two sages, when you get the you know, they're doing, I'm a better bard than you, and who the hell are you, and all of that, and not hard to answer, and all of that stuff. One of the key questions is, you know, where do you come from, or who, and it's a sort of variant of the who are you question. You know, I come from the brilliance of the rising sun, because that question, where do I come from, you answer that, that's an immediate. The answering poet gets present and listens to that question, where do I come from? Becomes present to themselves and then present to where am I arising from in this moment. And so, for example, I'm arising from the brilliance of the rising sun. So there's a conjunction happening there between that consciousness of the poet and the direct experience of the rising sun.
Inner and outer.
Yeah. Or another answer is, I come along the rivers of Leinster. I attune, so in that moment I become present, I attune to the rivers of Leinster, I'm arising out of that. Can I just borrow your tangerine? When we're looking at the back of
I
see. Yeah, yeah. No, tambourine or tambourine. No, tangerine. There's a tangerine. Tangerines are little. They're little oranges. They're like an orange, but they're smaller. See, it's smaller. Thank you. Now, when we're doing that conjunct thing, and these are doing it as well with big kind of mythical things, it's kind of very, you know, it's kind of very powerful, isn't it? But what I want you to do, if you will, is just come into yourselves for a moment. I'm just going to hold up the tangerine, and I want you to commune with the tangerine. And just directly, so come into yourselves first of all. Just close your eyes for a second. And just get present to your own sense of sovereignty. Again, reinstate your boundary. Come into your senses and just get present to your sense of self. And then when you're ready, I just want you to commune with the tangerine that I'm holding up. All I mean by that is just look at the tangerine and then just extend your awareness towards it. and create, if you like, a grail space between you and this tangerine. And we'll just see what happens when you do that.
Create a what?
Just be with the tangerine. Create a space of contact, a joined space between you and the tangerine. Okay? Just do this for a minute or two. So being one with the being yourself and being one with the tangerine. Okay, now just gently withdrawing your energy from the tangerine and coming back into yourself. And then just seeing how you are after that experience. So what was that like? What happened to you?
When you see a piece of paper, it's not just a piece of paper, you're looking at the cloud and the rain and the sun. And so for me there was a sense of the tangerine as a seedling and then growing into a tree and the sun and the rain. And there was a sense of the whole story of the tangerine.
So a direct connection with the life of the tangerine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which felt connected to me.
Yeah, that's right.
I was once small and same rain and the sun. And
that's right. And okay. So do you see...
Isn't that odd, because...
Yeah,
sorry,
go on.
That seems obvious to you, like, it never occurred to me. I was...
What happened?
What it's like to be in segments and juicy and, like...
Yeah, so that's... No, that's great. So that's how it happened to you. No, it's fine. Yeah.
Think outside it. And I just thought it was weird, like, we're both coming in with tangerine and we're seeing completely different things.
The tangerine is a multifaceted being. Okay, tangerine has many levels.
It's multi-segmented.
It's multi-segmented as well as multi-leveled. It's true, it's true. So that's one experience, that's another. What other experiences are there? Yeah.
One was I had quite a strong sense of the tangerine, looking at the tangerine as though it had been sliced across. So looking at all the segments.
Yeah.
And going out that way.
Yeah.
And the other thing then that kind of changed into me being inside the tangerine,
yeah.
The tangerine being inside me.
Yes, good. Yeah, nice.
Kind of
yeah, lovely. Yeah,
both.
Yeah, both and yeah, good, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So connected you to Spain.
Spain.
Yeah, connected you. Yeah.
But also eating it and being eaten.
Yes, good.
I got fun straight off because I had the idea of you playing it.
Yeah.
and then its orangeness is really fun as well.
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it? Yeah.
And then I went into it more, and then I became more tangerine like myself. I got the juiciness and all that sort of vitality.
The thing for me, being brought up the way I was, Catholic, when you held the tangerine up, because it was against the window, I could just see a circular object.
Yeah.
It became the host, the Eucharist, the divine, the food of the divine, the connection to the divine.
Yes, that too, yeah.
There and within me, quite a sacred religious experience.
Yeah, lovely, yeah, good, nice.
That's what I wanted to say, John.
I thought you'd lost it again, and I'm afraid
I
couldn't take that seriously at all.
Okay. So what happened? I just want you to commune with a tangerine. I want you to look at a tangerine. Do it now. Look at the tangerine. What happens? But what happens, Lily? When you say I can't, what happens? What's the can't?
Oh, I've got this picture in my head of going home tonight and saying, so what did you do today? And me going, well, I was invited to commune with a tangerine. I just can't take it there's certain things that I can't take seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Like, couldn't do it.
That's okay. What's there though in that place if I can't do it? Is I don't want to do it, or it's silly, or people will laugh at me? What lives in that place?
I don't. Because I do accept what you're saying.
No, I know that, yeah.
I accept the point you're making. Yeah. I think it's how you're making the point that I mm-hmm. struggle with.
Okay, explain that to me then. Tell me about that.
I get what you're trying to invite us to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it just takes me to all those Monty Python, you know, behold the shoe. I just can't get past that. You're holding something up as an object for us to kind of feast our eyes on, and I can't. it just taps into all the humour in me, and I can't get past it. You can call it defensive if you want, but I don't think I'm being defensive. I'm just giving you a different perspective.
No, that's fine.
I struggled with that.
But I think it's the same good in the profane, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. You get the humour of it, don't you?
Yeah,
I do.
Which is as the sacred.
I had the same effect when I had to. When I had to feel the same thing with Fern, I just thought, no.
Mm.
It took me back, actually, to one of the first ever spiritual retreats I went on with this guy. And he said, I'd like, Becky, for you to stand up and commune with the plant.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. It's my first ever spiritual retreat. And he said, I'd like you to, you know, move with it.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, the plant in the corner of the room, yeah, if you'd like to pick up and just move with it. I completely went into the most awful giggles, the worst kind, where I just couldn't stop. They just kept bubbling up and bubbling up, and it felt like that was going to start. So, yeah, I don't know, certain things.
Mm.
It's like Fern inviting me on a dance thing. I just can't do it. Yeah.
But you want to.
No, I don't. For me, I've got to take what you say and put it in a completely different frame.
Okay, so where would you take it?
I would take it more to maybe connecting with the people in the room.
Yeah.
So I can stay with the group, and I can stay with me in relation to the group. And I can move in between those two.
Okay. So connecting with an inanimate object is a step too far.
It's kind of easy. Well, yes, I think it's...
Yeah, it sounds like, doesn't it? I mean, that...
Yes.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, fine.
But just... If you disregard the boundary which you select as between sentient beings and non-sentient beings, then what's the difference if they're all sentient beings? If you disregard that boundary?
Come again.
The plant and the...
I wonder if this is about language. I wonder if this is about language, because actually I'm not exactly suggesting that this is a person, right? Let's say hello to Mr. Tangerine. I'm really not suggesting that at all. Right? It's I don't know what it is. Tangerine's a fruit. It's a fruit. It's a sort of... So... What happens to me if I look at this is I'm aware of its orangeness, I'm aware of a kind of its juiciness, actually. I was really aware of it as a fruit, as a sort of, and the delight of eating it, and the sort of, and so there's something about, now that's a living, for me, a living kind of experience. I'm not saying this is there is a certain amount of life in this, like there is in the plant. I'm not saying I'm not anthropomorphizing it. And I think one of the difficult areas around the territory that we're just talking about it is we can very easily get into a place where we start, it can become Disney very easily, where things become like the table can talk to you. Now, I can imagine even saying the table is talking to me, but I don't mean the table is talking to me. I mean I'm having an experience of something outside myself. That's I'm in some kind of communication. But I don't mean that at the kind of Disney kind of level. And there's no real words for what I mean exactly. So in a way you're raising something quite interesting. you know, sort of, because if we take it at the level of, hey, let's talk to the plants, little people. Plants are our friends. Now, these things are not. They're mysterious alien beings, what's a table, what's wood, these things. Actually, when you pay attention to these things, you come into something that stretches the boundaries of your own imagination and takes you somewhere different. Trouble with the language is it does imply Disney. You know, you don't have to do any of this job, Becky, but you're raising for me the interesting question that often when people talk like this, they talk Disney. They talk about the spirit of the trees and sort of as though they are like little people. Hello, little person, tell me what your life is like. And it's not like that. The kind of communing with or connecting to the universe. So when I talk about the synchronous universe, what happens is the communication that happens is kind of visceral and weird. It kind of stops the world a bit.
But I guess it also depends on culture.
Yeah.
So for some cultures, that's a sacred object because it comes from the land and the land is from the ancestors and ancestors die and they go back into the soil. And so there's something about, I guess it depends on our worldview and our culture. And if our culture is, that's something for me to eat, it's all about me consuming stuff,
yeah,
then we're going to have a different relationship to it than if, say for example, you're coming from a culture where everything is a giveaway, you know, the tree is giving away its fruit, and it's sacred, which is not Disney, it's something much deeper, much sacred that comes through and has come through the ancestors.
I think it does, but I think often when you get right into some of these tribal cultures, what they're meaning is something that's more bizarre than we normally think of. The trouble with these ideas of ancestors and cultures and shamanic ideas is they've become enculturated in Western forms. And so they're like, we kind of think we know what they mean. And actually, when I spent a bit of time with the Hopi once, and they are bloody weird people, I have to tell you. They really do a very strong connection with land and silence, but they are weird. Listening to them sometimes, or being with them, was going into some weird kind of space, really, when they talked about these things. So it's sort of... I suppose I want to challenge myself here, as well as all of you, somewhere to be with the mysterious nature of everything somewhere. And so when in a sense, I don't even have the right language. I'm not sure there is a good language. But if we are with something like whatever this thing is, what this thing is the tip of something, and sort of underneath it, there's lots of potential layers of something or experience. So to be with, so what the bards, and when we reach back for what the bards and things were saying, they're talking as well from an understanding of experience that we have lost, that we don't have any direct access to anymore. And so we often, I think I know what they're talking about, but I also think I don't. I think I've got some inkling, but actually there's something much more mysterious that happens when you kind of do this. So this idea of kind of reaching out, bringing your attention to some aspect of the world, is deconstructive. And in a certain way, what it should do is produce reaction. You know, so there's a sort of, so it will do like many things. There'll be some aspects of the experience that will feel familiar and okay. And then it should produce reaction like, this is silly, this is wrong, or this is mysterious, this is overwhelming, I don't get that. Because in a way, part of what's being invited here is to step into a mystery. Whether it's the mystery of me and the tangerine, or the sword, or the white heart, or whatever. There's something about, okay, if I get present, and then I get with myself, and then I get present with what's around me, what I then start to hit into is something that literally starts to deconstruct me and deconstruct my world. And in that process then starts to dismantle my kind of views of the world and possibly reconfigure it. Now, that said, we've got to, however, take the stepping stones to that experience are whatever we find, but then not stopping at whatever we find. You know, a lot of the discourses, particularly around the land, land's interesting, I think, because when people talk about, sometimes I hear a lot about the land in Glastonbury, and I think people who use the word land, what they used to use the word God. You know, I attuned to the land. In the previous generations, they said, I listened to God. What's the land? You know, where does the land end? Is the land underneath my feet? Is it Britain? Is it the continent of Europe? Is it the whole earth? Is it, when does the earth end? You know, so there's a whole, in some ways I want us to kind of deconstruct some of these ideas a bit and kind of and to stay very close to our own experience but to get interested in our experience. Not because we're being defensive or any of that, it's just get into, what does that tell us?
Could I mention vocabulary?
Yeah.
Yeah, and because I don't think we have any vocabulary to deal with these ideas.
No, I agree.
We just haven't. And I think if their ideas are translated from tribal cultures, they're translated into our vocabulary, grossly inadequate. But I think the colloquy has something really interesting. Instead of saying commune, make a space and commune with this,
colloquy,
if you'd said, you must stop your thought, I am the tangerine, you might still have the same reaction, but actually that leads you on to the deconstructing the world, is saying, I am juicy, I am segmented, I am... And that is a way of opening to the flow of mystery, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
In the way the bards did.
Mm.
I think I just had a reaction to you saying the word Disney. There was something about that. I just thought, no, come on, that's not okay. Because there's something in that where it then it feels like it sort of denigrates something. I felt a reaction to that as well.
No,
sure. I felt that as well, but I can see it Disneyfied because so many symbols in our world are Disneyfied. Yeah. Look at all the corporations that have a symbol. The Apple Mac. That destroys my idea of the sacredness of Apple in terms of a past culture. Is it just a bloody computer now? Or did it mean something special? Can I ever look at an Apple in the same way ever again? It Disneyfies it, you know, it deconstructs it, it disintegrates it, but how do you reconstruct it? It's gone.
Well, I think you have to come back to the experience, though, I think that's where you, so if you come back to the experience of Apple, if you come back to literal the Apple, right? So I think that's what I mean, in some ways, there's something about the going beyond the symbolic image to actuality, to an actual form. Right, so then, because I think literally, if you plonk an apple in front of yourself and look at an apple and then find a way to kind of experience the apple, it could be eating the apple, it could be looking at the apple, it could be smelling the apple.
But you don't use an image of a computer, do you, of a laptop, when you're holding an apple in your hand?
No.
Greta has a very good surreal visual way of doing this. So he'll give you an image of a hat and say, this is a bike. Yeah, and it's the same thing. It's asking you to deconstruct and reconstruct.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there anything that I think what you can sympathise with it? Because I kind of think, but I wouldn't have made a video of a cat. Like, kind of, I find that weird. So it's where you think that is sentient, that is not, and it's just. I probably would have more sympathy there with the flood than probably my sister's baby. And that is not very facial either, but it's also true. I would definitely talk to a plant. I would talk to a tangerine, no problem. But I might have more of a problem with human beings, whereas you talk to human beings all the time, make a video of a cat. I don't think it's different. It's not that
we come from a culture that says it's silly. And has told us it's silly all through our lives.
Yes. Mm.
And has told us to disrespect it and disregard it and actually see it as, you know, only in Disney films, you know, where they can go and talk, you know, where trees talk and things like that. You know, I mean, society has denigrated those ideas of interspecies communication.
Yeah, yes. Just chance from trees and people like that talk to trees and plants.
But the joke and the prank and the silliness do the same thing, don't they? They deconstruct and reconstruct and change your perception.
And I find something but like apple, mac and apple, take that as an example, or the word itself, apple, mac, it becomes quite separate from an actual apple, actually. I have it as a completely different thing than the actual, where it's come from, the variation of the name. Anyway. That's quite strange too, because it feels a bit separated. Perhaps not, when you just use a word all the time, to forget about where it's come from, I find. Anyway. I can't think of any other examples.
Well,
blackberries,
I mean, I'd forget about it in the past.
What about Ajax scouring powder?
What was that?
Ajax guards.
Take on the bite of Ajax.
There's something about the humour as well. I'm reminded of, I think it's Proserpine Choristes who tells the story of Demeter and Persephone.
Mm-hmm.
And she tells it really beautifully. And one of the things that she says is that at that point where Demeter is just in grief because Persephone has been abducted by Hades, and so nothing grows, and Demeter is just in this kind of dead wasteland. She is in the wasteland. Nothing will grow. And she says, I will not let anything grow. And then Baobo, who is this kind of goddess, comes along and she starts making these funny kind of gestures. She's a bit like the Sheila the Gig. And she makes these kind of gestures which bring laughter. And Demeter starts to laugh. And she laughs and laughs and laughs. And then she's able to grieve. And she cries and cries and cries. And then everything can grow. So there's something about the sacred and the profane, which feels like that's kind of what we're doing here. It feels like we're doing that pentagram here of the energy moving backwards and forwards somehow. That something has to the water can only flow through that process in a way. Yeah.
What's coming in? What I'm thinking of is, is it like actually when you start to receive from a person energetically, when you start to actually let somebody in, is that what can happen with objects as well, with organic materials, is actually allowing to receive from them?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you look at a tangerine, if I look at a tangerine, it starts to have an effect upon me. Not because it's a person, but because it's having an effect, you know, if I just literally, language is really hard, yeah, you're right, Penny, but if I just look at it, so I notice the orangeness, I notice the little green point at the centre, it's also reflecting light. I like tangerines, so I get this kind of feeling of pleasure as well, and sort of, so it starts to affect me, it's just, I start to become impacted by.
It's like your five senses you've been using today. It affects your five senses.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. So it has its. Or I don't like this, or I'm indifferent to this, or this is, you know, so there's a sort of an. And in a way, I think that's the kind of the there's something about, you know, it isn't about the tangerine really, but there's something about this kind of process of being present with ourselves and present with the other, whatever the other is, and then following that process, whether that process is images or pleasure or ideas or bloody hell, I don't like that, that's bizarre, you know, and then it's staying with that process that's in yourself, really, that's kind of interesting, I think, and Because that's, in a way, that's part of the kind of... the trouble is, you see, even when we use words like relationship, it can easily get into, I'm having a relationship with an orange, right? So it's hard to find the right language for this, because of course, I don't mean I'm having a relationship with the orange like I'm having a relationship with you, but there's something that happens. So there's like colloquy or confluence. I sometimes use the word confluence of two streams coming together, because there's something about... I mean, what I know, I suppose, is what's happening in me, and I have this much more vivid sense of the tangerine now than I did before. So it's become potentized for me. It's acquired meaning and depth that it didn't have before. It's just this tangerine sitting in Fern's laps, and it's engaged us all now in a kind of interesting contemplation, isn't it, about what's real, what's silly, what's true, what's all right, what's Disney, what's real, you know, and so it's a more numinous object now. It's acquired depth, acquired meaning.
But I think we protect ourselves against having any sort of communing with things that we're going to eat them in the way that you sort of like, because you have to, otherwise, animals that you're going to be eating, you try not to
love. Yes,
like,
yeah.
Understand you have to fight. You keep them at distance, and
it depends what you mean by commune, though, doesn't it? I mean, well, if you're making a salad, you really commune with all the vegetables. You're smelling them, and you're what as you wash.
Yeah, but you're not being them. You're smelling them, and you're touching them, and you're chopping them up. Yeah. But you're not being them, or you couldn't do it.
I don't know. The purpose of this is to be eaten. This is a fruit. Purpose of a fruit is to be eaten.
That's true.
It has no other purpose. If it isn't eaten, it just will rot. So Fern, hopefully at some point we'll get to eat a tangerine, and the tangerine will have fulfilled its purpose in that sense, because it's inevitable that it's either going to be eaten or it's just going to rot away. And
the seed into the ground, make another tree. That's real purpose.
Well, except that it's outside its real purpose, because it's outside normal. It's because it's taken into the human world. And the purpose of a fruit, in a way, is to be eaten by an animal. It takes the fruit somewhere else, so that it grows further away from the tree.
But you, as the bard, are saying to us, "I am the tangerine.
Yeah.
I am using a metaphor for life."
Yeah.
To ask you to see life differently.
Yes, well, I think I'm saying the tangerine, and it's not me, you see, it's me as the tangerine. It is true, me as the tangerine, right? So I'm saying a tangerine is not just a tangerine.
The gravity of you and the tangerine has now changed, because it's like you say that you're slightly moved towards the tangerine.
I feel a huge urge to burst into song.
Tangerine.
Hey, Mr.
Tangerine man. Yeah. The tangerine. You see? And all of this is the power of communing with the tangerine, paying attention to the tangerine. All of it is. No, I mean, you know, it's not about let's believe, you know, we could, and let's believe in the holy cult of the tangerine. Now that would be to turn something that, at the moment, this is an icon. Because icons transmit meaning. It's not an idol. It could turn into an idol. Everybody needs to believe in the tangerine and communing with the tangerine as the holy act.
And it's right. Far more alive than your normal experience. I'm in a rush, or just have one of those and stuffing it in your mouth.
Yeah, that's right. It's a particularly beautiful tangerine.
Actually, we are quite like this, that being in the group, we are quite like the tangerine, because it's like the segments, isn't it?
Yeah.
Segments that were sort of all... sort of separated, because each segment is actually
distinct. Yeah.
Distinct.
Totally.
Because it's got its own structure and
And its own seed, normally. Is that right? They've each got a seed inside them, haven't they? So that's kind of interesting. So it's kind of an interesting image in terms of some of the things we're talking about. I mean, and you know, I didn't choose it because I thought it was an interesting image. I just thought, what would be something more ordinary than swords or something to think about? Oh, look, there's a tangerine. Great.
You could get an artist come along, paint a still life of a tangerine, either cubist or realistic form,
yeah,
it becomes a cult object worth £5 million,
that's right,
stored in a bank vault, but nobody sees it.
That's right. That's
so it doesn't exist or not exist.
It's bizarre. That's absolutely, of course, that's absolutely what happens. Yeah.
So can I just?
Yeah.
In a way, I'm losing the point now. So there's something about so if you come back to the whatever it's, you know, the sages thing.
Yeah.
What's going on? There's something about, so we've really explored this, and then I'm thinking, what's it got to do with Yod-Heh-Shin
Because Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh is the creative cycle of life. Shin is the sort of the still center from which everything arises. So in a certain sense, this act of paying attention to this is Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh Shin. And whereas the Shin is the presence that perceives. Okay, so the point of this, and the point of what the bards are doing, is they go into that, when they say I am, they go into that place of stillness that is the Shin, right? And then, so I am the tangerine man right now, right? I am the person showing the tangerine. Who are you? I am the man who holds the tangerine. Right, that's the identity, that's the creative expression in that moment. I might go further, as Penny suggested. I am the tangerine. I am the juice. I show the segments of life. You know, it's like that, right? So the tangerine becomes part of the person, part of the creative expression. You could say, I am a sword. I am the sword that cuts through things. I am, there's a Hebrew chant that goes, Ani Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, which means I am Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. I am the creative expression of life. You know, so it's
protective out around.
Yeah, that's right.
People use this imagery when they blast into new organisations and things, don't they? I am the new broom that's sweeping up. I'm going to cut through all this crap. You know,
yeah, that's
and
right.
It's constantly used this imagery. I am something.
Yeah, that's right.
An instrument of change or focus.
Well, Donald Trump is definitely doing that, isn't he? He's completely doing that. You can see him doing it now. He is also tangerine as well. He's literally tangerine. Oh my God, I hadn't seen that.
I knew he'd get an air somewhere.
He literally is. That's so funny. Got any tangerine back?
I feel I shouldn't eat it now. It's not quite so attractive now.
So you get your tangerine back. What's it like to have the tangerine there? Just look at the tangerine. What's it like?
I wanted to just find a way of kind of sharing.
Yeah.
What I
felt. Oh, go on. Sure, go for it. Yeah.
And because again, you were back lit and just saw the black, and it's something. It really kind of me this morning when you were talking about the moon and the earth. And then both of you got into moon and earth stuff, and actually that the universe, again, this feels like a simple thing to say, but I felt like I really understood something, that the earth is not the earth on its own. It can't ever operate just on its own.
Yeah.
Usually as a human being or me, I, you know, those pictures of the earth.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's the thing we've got to save. We've got to save the earth.
Yeah.
That's the icon. It's almost. But to go actually, well, it can't function without the moon.
Yeah.
And so there was something that that I became the earth and the moon.
Okay. Nice. Yeah.
And that there was. It wasn't me and the tangerine. It was reality.
Yeah.
Could only be understood because of the relationship between the two of us.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
so actually,
that's
not, I didn't see it as a tangerine at all.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it became the backlit moon or something.
Yeah,
like that.
That's right. Yeah.
That was the earth, and I was the moon.
And you're the moon. Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
And I don't quite understand why that was so important.
Mm.
And now getting it back to me.
Yeah.
There's something about, it's very different now. It's not just a tangerine at all.
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
my universe.
Yeah.
But I am still me and the universe.
Yeah.
If I ever eat it, then of course then we will become one.
Yeah, that's right.
So reality is only ever understood between myself and the object, but it's not an object.
No, that's right.
There is no subject object.
No.
We together. Are the universe or reality or whatever we call that.
Yeah.
I haven't got the words for it.
Yeah, that's right. That's it.
So only in relationship is there life.
That's right. It's why those words colloquy and confluence, I think, are quite important. Confluence is two things coming together, and colloquy is something that comes back. It's a living movement back and forth. Okay, so it's not in the subject object dichotomy. That's the difference. It's a sort of moving experience.
Is that where it becomes different from projection, because we can project so much onto that pattern dream. That's quite a different experience, isn't it? Because that's when the tangerine has become an object.
Well, the difference there is a separation, I think. In projection, there's always separation.
Yeah.
Right? So projection is always the object, it's the hateful object or the desired object.
Yeah.
So there's a strong sense of separation. There's a sense of colloquy.
Yeah.
There's a sense of connection and a sort of a moving relationship. That's the big difference, I think.
Yeah.
Projection always splits, always has splitting in it, and always has a sense of the other as different from me, and I either love the other or I hate the other.
Yeah.
You know, so that, whereas this is a much more fluid interchange, really.
I have some education from a very powerful experience on retreat, which was really, really seeing that after a sort of weeks, just of everything falling, suddenly seeing that this was not different from me.
Yeah, that's it.
And nothing, really, really seeing it and knowing it here in a way that I can't explain, except that all I can do is, I know that I saw the world in a completely different way.
Yeah.
Sentience and insentience completely fell away.
And
it was extraordinary that if I do this, I can pick up a cup. And yet, it's impossible to describe it. But
there's
something much bigger than me going on.
Yeah.
You can't define in words, really. And I accept you can't. Yeah.
The Indra's net thing. Each of us cannot be separated.
That sentence she made, only in relationship is there life, I thought was really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And I immediately had a connection with that other phrase, that which does not regenerate is not the grave.
Yeah.
Somehow those
two are connected. Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
The other side of it that is that the objectness of us, that we think, you know, subjectively we're kind of alive, but actually objectively we're just objects.
No.
Well, not just objects, but we are objects.
It's the phenomenal world. It's all phenomenal.
I haven't heard that phrase. I don't know that phrase.
Things. I don't know, matter.
Yes. Yeah, phenomena does mean things, so yeah, that's
matter.
Mm.
Yes, I remember it like, I think they were a bit lengthy, it's like a tricked infection that goes into your brain, and you think your brain is, you know, you're thinking with your brain, but it is actually just, you know, just inches from your teeth, and it just can just get infected, and then you realise, it's not coming down to earth, you realise you're just an object, and it's like, it's made up of, you know, it's complicated objects, but you're just object, and all this consciousness goes haywire. If you get a tooth infection that goes into your brain, then kind of...
Well, yeah. I mean, you're talking about enfolded layers, right? So there's layers. So an infection can alter your consciousness. Your consciousness can also potentially alter an infection.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a sort of Just as we finish, I'm just going to read, just to continue being relatively controversial. I want to read something to you about subtle activism, which we can talk about tomorrow, but will equally sound a bit mad, probably.
What is that book here?
It's called Subtle Activism by David Nicol from the SU, State University of New York Press. And it's it's actually a scientific study of the spiritual practice effect upon political realities. So I'm going to, I'm just going to read you this. It's something called the International Peace Project, which was a study designed to bring together 200 TM meditators in Jerusalem in August and September 1983. To measure the impact of the meditation group on the war in Lebanon, as well as on a variety of other social indicators in Israel. It's one of the most significant of all studies on the Maharishi effect, in part because Yale's prestigious Journal of Conflict Resolution accepted it for publication, and in part because it's attracted the focused attention of several critics of the research. The International Peace Project was a prospective study in which predictions of results were made in advance and lodged with independent scientists in the United States and Israel. Some of the more notable results include war deaths in Lebanon dropped by an average of 76% during the 25% of days when there was highest attendance at the assembly. War deaths were especially low during a 13-day period in which group size was raised to a high level according to a pre-assigned schedule. When all the variables were combined into a composite quality of life index, striking correlations can be observed with the attendance figures at the assembly, and there's a graph that shows a calculated rise in the numbers of people meditating, which has a similar pattern of the fall off of death and conflict. So that's one thing. Another thing is, I'm just going to read you out these few studies, and then we can talk about it.
I wanted to pass the tangerine gap round. It's just got to you. Quite like the idea of just having a segment.
Oh, I see.
Now it feels like we are the tangerine.
Somebody will miss out. How do you
do? I'll miss out. Give it to the others. I'm kind of a bit occupied, so I don't mind. I don't mind missing the tangerine. That's fine. So pass on. Do pass on the tangerine.
We can have a half each.
Okay.
Ooh. That's okay. This is tricky. I had a tangerine earlier, so.
Oh, thank you.
I'm injected
just
osmotically.
Yeah. These are staggering figures, aren't they?
They are. So that was one thing. Now another thing, it's a much smaller study. We can just find it.
HeartMath are doing all this kind of stuff, aren't they, in the States?
Yeah, well, there's quite a lot of stuff going on around it.
That was back in 1983
they were doing this. This is when the Maharishi were doing a whole thing about global harmony.
Saying this is the explanation, but it could be explained by the same people.
Could be explained by what, sorry?
By, it would be the same people who would be out killing things or meditating.
No, it wasn't the same people. No, it really wasn't. No, they didn't. That would be much, if we could persuade, God, if we could have persuaded Hezbollah to go and do meditation, that would be a much more effective action than anyone. Wouldn't that be a wonderful idea? I so wish that were true, because that would be just great.
Statistically,
there would be no deaths, would there?
The point about this study is that it was actually studied properly. Mm. Right, it's not just the sort of, they didn't just publish it. In order to get into the Journal of Conflict Resolution, it was peer-reviewed, it was subject to blind trials and control samples. And there's another one in here that I wanted to read, so I can't bloody find it. There I am, this one. Yeah, this is another, it's a much smaller one. A Shoshone medicine man, whose personal mission is to heal the sacred places of the American Indians, conducted a healing ceremony at a power spot near Devil's Tower, Wyoming. He agreed to conduct a second sham ritual that had the same outer appearance at a control location. The real ceremony saw a steady cumulative deviation away from random data, with odds of chance of being less than one in two. This is a statistical analysis. So the odds against it being a chance effect was less than one in 200, whereas the shammed ceremony resulted in data indistinguishable from chance.
So what was the effect?
The effect was a sort of reduction of crime, a reduction of violence within the kind of target area. Sham ceremony. There was no reduction, or anything that couldn't be just put down to chance. So the point of doing, I mean, we'll come back to this tomorrow. But the challenge of studies like that is the idea that actually, because what are we saying when we say that? We're saying that, particularly the Israel-Lebanon study, which is the most studied and the statistical analysis of that being chance is like one in 200 billion. Because they did a really very detailed, study of the kind of the consequence of people, kind of the numbers meditating at any one time against the reduction. So, what we have to think about, well, we can could just decide the whole thing is rubbish, and we could, but. If we consider what's being put to this here, it's that if you put a load of people in a room who are not just meditating, but connecting to a particular aspect of the world, and you do this and it suggests there is an actual effect that happens from that. Doesn't mean that you shouldn't do political activity or anything else. It is just saying that is not simply an internal process. Similarly, the Shoshone medicine man, in particular, quite an interesting study, that one, because what you see there is because you could, by doing a big public ceremony, create a placebo effect, and people, just because they felt better, you could reduce things. So he does the same thing, but he's putting no internal intention behind it. So it's a pretend ceremony. Now, that's a particularly interesting study, because the study where he's really putting intention in has an apparent effect, while the other one doesn't. So it's challenging us to consider that these little processes that we're doing here may not be just internal and may affect much more than just us, and that's where we're back with this whole idea of the web and the interconnectedness of things, and that's where we're somewhere back with the kind of the insights that the bards talk about when they talk about this universe where everything is connected, where their identity is somewhere plugged into the larger identity of the universe. So they not only then are they affected by the universe, and this is the thing that you have, but bards are considered to be these very powerful people whose words can transform the world. So these are the two energies these studies are pointing us to, that actually that not only is there the possibility of being deeply affected by objects that are apparently separate from us, but we can also have an effect upon the world and upon those objects.
Basically, it's the old-fashioned power of prayer.
Well, it is, but it's taking that but the problem with the power of prayer, that's sort of mediated via God, isn't it? So the power of prayer, you pray to God, and God thinks, all right then, and you've got this all-powerful bloke that's, go on. Whereas this is something that's much more interconnected and kind of, and suggests that there is a confluence.
Christian mystical power. Yeah, but that would be different.
Surely it would be, but we're talking about a confluent relationship, aren't we? So there is a sort of confluence between ourselves and the other. And yes, we are connecting to something bigger in that process. So you're connecting into this kind of bigger field. And through your particular expression of that bigger field, brought into relationship with whatever is there, something tangibly changes. Now, that's not saying to believe that, but that's something for us to think about, and we can maybe talk about it tomorrow.
So energetically, we hate Trump.
Yeah.
We can't come into relationship with him, and
yeah,
we can't have and our influence is we're held in a helpless
place. Well, we are. We're held in the standoff place. I'm not saying we should love Trump either, but coming into relationship with Trump, and then being aligned with whatever we helps us align with that, then brings us into something more like what a Bard. What would a Bard do with Trump? I think he would do something like that. He would come into alignment with the universe. He would come into alignment with Trump. He would, and then something would happen. I don't know what they would do, but it, but the while we're doing get off Trump, we want you not to exist. We don't want you to exist in the universe. Or while we're doing look after us, Father Trump. We kind of, in one case we're exiling him, another case we're being engulfed by him. Whereas the complicated and powerful thing is to hold ourselves present in relationship with the phenomenon that is Trump, and then to be mutually, and then to be transformed potentially by that process, but also to consider that he can be transformed, which is kind of something we get a little glimpse of with the holding hands with Theresa May. You know, kind of, and God help us, I have to start thinking about Theresa May as a force for goodness, not a kind of challenging view. But this is just something to think about. I'm not saying this is true. I'm just saying that this is kind of what some of these things suggest.
Well, you see it with clients, don't you? If they've changed and then their family relationship, you know, all of a sudden...
All things ripple away.
Family relationships just like, it's just like they're settled down and, you know...
So that's right.
And you could take it one step... Again, I thought was that if I see the Trump in me, and I have a relationship with the Trump in
me, indeed, that's right.
That will change the Trump in me.
Might change the Trump. And then the other thing we have to think about there, given that this idea of chaos theory, that the small can influence the very large, even though our impact might be tiny. Tiny things can affect huge, enormous systems at tipping points. And so we never know quite the effect that we have in the world.
And we never know when that tipping point is.
And we never know that, right? So you have to keep very close to... So you can't know that, right? Yeah. You could never know that, actually, because tipping points are very mysterious. Yeah. So all you can do is to be present and to trust and to be as authentic as you can. But what that idea holds up to us is the idea that we are never powerless, even though much of the time we think we are.
I'm just reminded that this week somebody was reminding me about... Is it John Birdie? Big issue chap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he had the 3% rule that you just change 3%.
Yeah.
Don't try and change.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's kind of really...
Yeah, that's another example of that, isn't it? That's a really good example, because then the kind of ripple effect of that, of course, you know, 3% here, 3%, that's a lot of stuff happens. Okay, let's just, at the end, so just pause for a moment and just, we'll come back to all this tomorrow, so just take a breath. And just find ourselves, just get present for a moment, just at the end of our day. And just notice the effect of the day upon yourself. And just breathe together for a moment. Thank you very much, guys. Have a good evening. And see you in the morning.